Hi, love. How are you?
Hello. Good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah.
You've got a story to tell?
I do. Yeah, I'm going to tell you a story. All right. Once upon a time, there was a sweet baby born into a loving mother's arms, a mother without a husband in 1944. A mother who thought she wasn't strong enough to make a different decision. She had met a man at a dance during wartime training just 9 months before. At 6 weeks, her daughter was given up for adoption, as was the plan all along. A single woman in the 40s, remember? The young woman took her sweet baby from her breast, passed her to a nurse and said goodbye, forever fracturing her soul. It would be 30 years until she saw her daughter again. This daughter of hers was loved and cared for by her adoptive mother, and she grew up in a happy family. This baby lived in a small country town with a mother, a father, a sister. It was in this small town that the child played, learned, and grew into a woman, and she also met a man at a dance. Years passed, and the child became a mother herself. It wasn't until she had two children of her own that she said, while nursing her own daughter and her mum starching collars, "I always felt different, like I didn't belong." "You were adopted," was the response. More and more time passed until the woman had four children and stumbled across an ad in the paper. An adoption agency that helped families reconnect. She found her mother. A mother who had wondered about that child of hers all her life. Who had wondered how different her life would be if she'd made a different choice. A mother who loved her child. A mother who didn't remember the name of the man at a dance. The young woman in the story never had any more children. She lived her life alone. I often wonder how she did it. Gave up her baby. How could she? Did she regret it for the rest of her life? Did she think about that daughter of hers every single day of her life? Now, as a mother, I have nothing but compassion for that young woman, kindness and so much sadness. I wonder what she thought she contributed to this world, this planet, this life. I wish she could know that she is remembered, as she is honoured, as she's not forgotten. The young woman's, hang on, let's just pause that bit. Hardly started. The young woman's name was Winifred, and she was my grandmother's mother, my mother's grandmother, my great-grandmother, and my daughter's great-great-grandmother. That child, now a woman, a mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, that child who prayed all her adult life to know her father, his name, his face, her roots, a place where she belonged, that woman who has had so much faith. And this is where the story stops. It doesn't end. The end is still being written. I believe he's being found. A man at a dance in World War II. A man in a photo looking so much like brothers and sons. A man who was in the right place at the right time. A man who grew up just 350 metres down the street from that tiny baby. A man who married and had children of his own. And incredibly, a man who was friends with an old man I once knew. This is a story about a mother, a baby who was so loved, and a man named Lionel. <You cry.
laughs> Oh. So far, so good.
Yeah. So I feel like we always knew that Granny was adopted, and she talked about it. She talked about Winnie, and We just knew that she was adopted, and we knew that Winnie was the mother, and that was all we really knew. And she didn't know anything about her dad, except that when Granny reconnected with Winnie in the 70s, Winnie said, "I met a man at a dance. I met a man in Port Pirie." She said he was a navigator, but she didn't remember his name. And I sat with Granny early this year, maybe April or May, and I said, "Granny, do you know what? I'm going to find your dad. I'm going to find him. I don't know how, but I'm going to find him." And she said, "Okay, just as long as you do it before I die, you've got time." And I went home and thought, do you know what I need? I need a photo. I need a list of photos of men from World War II. And if I find a photo, I might find a photo of a man that looks like somebody, looks like one of my cousins or somebody. And I asked Will's mum, so Helen is very much into family history, and I said, where am I going to get photos of men from Port Pirie?
So your husband's mum.
Yeah. And I didn't think she didn't think I would find some photos, because I thought maybe I need to go to Canberra to go to the War Memorial Museum. Anyway, I sort of put out of my mind until it must have been May that this happened, that Granny and Papa were moving out of their home because Papa had been so unwell. And I said, and it happened very quickly, and I said, I'll go around and start packing things. And I took Harriet and I took Iris, and they were playing on the floor with the blocks while I was packing the pictures off the wall and just little trinkets, wrapping them in things. And I got distracted because I found a book at the bottom of Granny's cupboard. This book is called The Personal Pictorial Honour Roll of South Australians Who Have Enlisted in the RAF in the Second World War. And I thought, this is the book I want. This is exactly what I want. And this has been in Granny's cupboard for years and years and years, because it says, the inscription at the beginning, to dear Ron with love, Connie. They were Granny's adoptive parents. So her adoptive father is in this book, and Connie has given it as a gift to her husband. And so Granny has probably had this since her mum died. Maybe did she die in the 70s? It's been sitting in Granny's cupboard all these years. And so, distracted from the packing, I sat on the couch while the girls were playing and looked through. There are 155 pages of photos with little descriptions of the man enlisted. And I sat and looked through this whole book, and I was stopped at one page. A man called Lionel of Port Pirie, age 18. And he looks, if you just look at him, does he look like anybody?
He looks like your cousins.
I think he looks like Will and Ed and Phil. Mm. And then looking at other photos, he looks like Lyndon Pearson as well. Anyway, it had all the right things. So Winnie, when she met this man at a dance, Winnie was 19. She enlisted in the war in November of 42, and this man, Lionel, enlisted in January of 43. So I felt like it needed to be a man that was around her age. It would have made sense for somebody around her age. She was from Wallaroo, but enlisted and was training in Port Pirie. And this man, Lionel, was from Port Pirie, enlisted in Port Pirie, but had various other places where he was working. He was a pilot. And anyway, all of this, the picture and the little description. So I thought, oh, I can start researching. So I felt like I spent weeks and weeks and weeks almost obsessed with this story. I subscribed to old like newspaper articles. So there's a lot that have been digitized, and you can search all sorts of things online. And there's really not very much from Winifred, because I think with Lionel, I think he came from quite a good family in Port Pirie, so there was quite a lot of mention of him in the Port Pirie Recorder, which was the paper back then. And I found an article from when he was 12, he got an award for music. So he was very musical, this man. He played the organ at church and would sing in the choir. So I could see so many articles in the paper where Lionel would be the organist at the wedding, or singing at the wedding. And what I didn't have to start with was, I needed to confirm that Lionel was in Port Pirie for the dates that they needed to have met to have conceived Granny. So, you know, she was born in the April. So there was like a 6-week window between June and July of 1943 that they would have had to be in Port Pirie together. I found 4 of 6 weekends that he was in Port Pirie. He was in the paper, leading aircraftman Lionel Edwards in Port Pirie for the weekend, staying
really?
With the parents. Yeah. And one of those weekends of the 6 that he needed to be there was his sister's wedding. So he was the groomsman for his sister Ruth's wedding. And it just, these articles in the paper were so beautiful, because it described her dress, and she had this beautiful Peter Pan collar, and talked about the parents, and then it talked about the music that they sung at the wedding, and what the bridesmaids wore. And he was in Port Pirie one of those days for a funeral, and then it would just often say Lionel visiting his parents. But he just kept coming up in the social pages. He was groomsman a couple of times that I'd found, but he was always playing the organ at church and always singing at church. Anyway, so when I had the dates right, that, and do you know what? I should have said at the beginning, I could be wrong about all of this. Mm. He might not be her father, but I really, really believe that he is. I feel like I've got so many little details sort of weaved together now that I've got this big picture. But while I was in this realm of research, and like, I felt like I was a bit of a detective, I was so invested in his life, like this 18, 19-year-old boy, and I felt like I knew him because there was so much detail in the paper and I could just follow him along and I could just see what he did, for that time anyway. And I found that, so I've got, his parents were Percival and Emily, so Granny's grandparents, potentially, and they lived in Port Pirie. And I've, do you know what I haven't mentioned? The adopted family of Granny's lived in Port Pirie. So my Granny grew up in Port Pirie, where Winifred had met Lionel. So Granny grew up in a house with a mum and a dad and a sister, and she lived 350 metres away from where Lionel grew up with his parents. So when Lionel was only 18 when he would have met Winnie, and he was 22 when he was discharged from the army, I assume that he would have visited his parents a lot, if not even moved back home. And Granny was 350 metres down the street.
His own daughter.
Maybe his own daughter down the street, yeah. Mm. And I also, because Granny was a dental nurse there, and I wonder, did his parents go to that dentist? I don't know. But what is interesting, Granny grew up Catholic, and Winnie was also Catholic, and so Papa, my grandfather, was Methodist. Lionel was also a Methodist. And Granny always talks about how the Methodist and the Catholic didn't get along back then, or they didn't, you weren't supposed to marry them, but they did anyway. And Lionel had so much to do with the church, being the organist and being in the choir. And Papa's family also were with the Methodist church. Papa's dad was a lay minister with the church, but there were so many churches in Port Pirie, and I just assumed that, because Papa's family didn't have any money, they had six kids and they lived in housing trust. And I just assumed that they were probably at different churches. And they might have been, but I've seen some overlapping. I found an article. So the Central Methodist Mission was where Lionel often played the organ and where his sister got married. So I'm assuming that's their church. There is an article that I've found that Papa's dad, G. Pearson, was the minister at that church on a Sunday. And he wouldn't have been that much older than Lionel, so they probably knew each other as well. Mm. I spent an hour on the phone to Barry, I'm getting a little bit off track at the moment, but Barry, Papa's brother, to just ask him what he knew and if there was any extra information, but he just didn't know anything. He didn't know about Lionel or just any extra information that I could just piece together stories. What I did need from Helen, Will's mum, she helped me have the war records digitised, so she'd contacted the War Memorial and did all of that for me. So I had Lionel's and Winnie's war records sent to me, and neither of them had been digitised before, so nobody ever asked for them. So with Winnie, I at least never ever knew her middle name, and her middle name was Vera. So she was Winifred Vera, and she was 5'1¼", and she had blue eyes. And you don't know this stuff about people.
Mm. Like, well, these are your ancestors.
Yeah, and she would have been 100 just last month. She would have turned 100, okay. Yeah. And she, in this war record, she had applied to be she wanted to list as a telegraphist. I got that right, a telegraphist, but she failed the aptitude test, so she was a cook's assistant, poor thing. But she was a sweets worker, and I didn't realise until just this morning, I was just re-looking over things. I thought that she lived in Wallaroo. I knew she was from Wallaroo, but before she enlisted, she actually lived on King William Street in the city, and she worked in Gawler Place at the sweets shop there called Tandy's.
Wow.
Yeah. So I should go and see if any of it is still there. I've got addresses. But Lionel's war records, he was only 5'8", so he wasn't very tall, and he had brown eyes, and he was a shipping clerk before the war. I've got one thing that I, because he was a pilot, and it says here, Edwards is young and unexperienced and is not impressive. However, he is new to commissioned rank and may develop. He is a capable co-pilot and most reliable. That was his commanding officer's statement in June 45. What was very interesting that I found in both of their war records, there was a general conduct sheet for drunkenness. Lionel was certified no entry 9 times for drunkenness. Mm. But Winnie was certified no entry, 4 times for drunkenness. So I don't know what that really means, except that they were out, they'd had a few drinks, and they weren't allowed back into barracks. Is that what you would think that would mean?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Yeah. And Winnie, see, I feel like I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but she was discharged on compassionate grounds on the 1st of April 1944, just 3 weeks before she had Granny.
Okay.
So she, I don't know if she didn't know that she was pregnant or she kept it a secret, but she was still in service until just 3 weeks before she had a baby.
Mm.
But what I did find was the one article that I found of Winnie, it was like in maybe the September of 43 or the October, so she would have been pregnant but maybe not known. She won 3rd prize in a dance competition, like a jive dance at the Port Pirie Town Hall. And it's just so nice to read things like that, that we can just sort of get a little bit of a picture of what they might have done or what they might have been like.
Well, you're finding out more about your great-grandmother than most people know about their normal great-grandmothers.
Well, lots of people don't know their great-grandmother's name. And I think for me what has been so important is because I feel so interested and fascinated and so drawn to my mother line, like my girls, it's this direct bloodline from their mother and their grandmother and their great-grandmother and great-great-great. And it's so important, and there's just so much that we do pass on to our daughters. And yeah, I just don't want her to be forgotten about. Because, you know, Winnie, she married 3 times, but she never had any kids. And do you know what's so sad? I can't find anything about her now because she married 3 times. I don't know what her name is.
Mm.
I don't know what she changed her name to. I don't even know when she died. I don't know how she died. Granny knows that she lived in Sydney. Granny thinks she might have died when she was about 75-ish. But I can't find her. And, you know, when we change our names, women, I feel like we just get a bit lost.
Mm.
All of a sudden we're a new person. Like me now, I'm Olivia Dickerson. I'm a new person.
Mm.
There was no record of me before. And then,
yeah.
You know?
The whole adoption thing back then, it was driven by the church with shame in mind and by the parents.
Yeah, well, Winnie, so as a single mum in the 40s, I wonder if she even had a choice. Mm. I listened to a podcast not long ago called The Secrets We Keep, and Amelia Oberhart was the host of that, and it was so interesting. And she'd said that between the 40s and the 70s, maybe even into the 80s in Australia, there were over 200,000 babies that were taken from their mums, like single mums mostly, and a lot of it was run by the church. And when I think about Winnie, I wonder if that happened to her. Mm. I wonder if she had a choice.
Could you imagine what that would feel like?
I couldn't even imagine, and I can only imagine. And I just imagine how sad it is. And your heart is broken to give that baby away.
Mm.
And to know that, I think, I wonder if Granny, like, how would you feel if you knew you were adopted, that your mum gave you away? Did your mum want you? Did your mum love you? And I think that's what Granny has felt all these years, that she mustn't have loved me enough to keep me. But I went and saw a psychic. I saw a medium. And see, this might put some listeners off, but to me, I really believe it. I saw a friend and said, look, I'm trying to find Lionel. I'm trying to find if he is my granny's father. What can you do to help me? And she said, look, let's see what comes up. And we had a phone call, and I remember sitting in the car by the beach, and she said, look, I'm going to light a candle and just tell me a few things, and I'll know in just a few minutes if something's going to come up, or if not, you know, we'll see. Anyway, we spoke for an hour. As soon as I said Winnie's name, Winnie's soul just appeared to her. She was just there. And Winnie said, I'm so glad that this is coming up. It's time that this needs to be known for our family. And she said it was so important for my granny's soul, her soul's journey, that she knew this information. She knew where she belonged and she knew who her father was, because it was so important that she didn't take this onto the next life. And Granny said to me, a little while ago, I said, why is this important to you? She said, it's my roots, you know, it's where I'm from. And so in this psychic reading, I suppose, Winnie said she wished she had been a stronger woman. She wished that she wished she had made a different choice, but she, like, due to circumstances and resources, she just didn't have that choice. But she'd said in this session that just how much she loved that baby and how she thought about that baby every day of her whole life. And
just wondering what she's
doing.
Yeah,
she'd wondered.
If she's alive.
And she'd wondered if what her life would be if she'd made another choice, if she'd kept that baby.
Mm.
And she took Hayley, the medium, through timelines, and she said, I suppose it was like Hayley being walked through what had actually happened. And Winnie said that, like, Hayley could see her holding the baby and she was feeding the baby, and then she passed the baby over and said goodbye, and she said her soul fractured at that moment for the rest of her life. It was never ever the same.
Mm.
And she said that Winnie said that it wasn't until she died. So when she, this is another little bit of a bit out there for some people, when she arrived at heaven, Hayley's words, when she arrived there, she was greeted by Connie, who was Granny's adopted mum, and they embraced and they both said, or Winnie had said, thank you for looking after my daughter.
Mm. That's pretty powerful.
And she said it wasn't until she died that she realised how much of a part of our family she was, because she could see things. She could see what we were all doing, if you believe in that.
Mm.
And Hayley said that when it's Granny's turn, time to go, that she'll be greeted by her two mothers.
Mm.
And Winnie said that she, her, Hayley said, Winnie's soul contract is to heaven, but she comes to earth and she sits with Granny. And she said, it was about...
Well, to... if not for her, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I know.
Mm.
Yeah, but she's... That's another, I'll get back to that bit. When she said that since about December, January, so December last year, January this year, she's been around Granny a lot, and she asked why, and I said probably because Papa had been so unwell. And Winnie said that she's just been around because she wanted to offer some solace in Granny's life, because she hadn't been able to give her any in her life. But she also took Hayley to the dance. And she could watch, she watched them meet, and she saw their eyes lock, and she said that it set Winnie on fire when she met Lionel. And there was a lot of passion, and they danced and danced and danced and danced. And I'm thinking now about the dancing and the way Hayley could see the way he moved, and he was very coordinated, I suppose. And watching, looking through the papers and how musical he was, I can see that that makes sense. And then how Winnie had won that, oh, come third in that dance competition. They like to dance. And so Hayley saw it all. And I said, look, can you tell me a name? Can you give me a name? And she said, I just really struggle with names. I've never been able to get a name. But Winnie's showing me a photo of him. And Winnie's telling me he had a very strong jawline, which I feel like is a pretty descriptive characteristic of someone, that they have a strong jawline.
Mm.
And I said, Hayley, I've got a photo of him. Could I send it to you? So I sent her the photo. And she looked at it and she said, Olivia, that is 100% without a doubt the man that I can see at the dance. That is him. I can see him. And like looking at this photo in the book, he has a strong jawline.
Mm.
Uncle Lenny had a strong jawline. Mum said they used to tease him and call him Chin Man.
Mm.
Will Doak has got a very strong jawline, don't you think?
Mm.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique feature. Characteristic. Mm. Yes. Anyway, I could be wrong. It might not be him. But I really, really believe that it's him. But what you said about, like, if it weren't for Winnie and the choices that she made, the choice she made, that huge sacrifice of giving up her baby, we wouldn't be here, because Granny would have had another life. Granny wouldn't have met Papa, because she wouldn't have lived in Port Pirie, and she wouldn't have gone to that dance, and it would have been different.
Mm.
But I felt like with all this research, I sort of got a little bit stuck. So I'd found the digitized records of newspapers only go up to about 1953. It's for like privacy, but also nobody's done it. Nobody's put them online yet. So you have to go and Like, I thought about doing a road trip to Port Pirie. They have a history room there. And I was like, I'm going to go to Port Pirie and I'll sit there and look through all their papers. And I wanted to drive past the houses because, as far as I know, like Lionel's house, it's a beautiful old house with this blue roof. I assume it'll still be there. It's just too nice to have been knocked down. I thought I'd go there and have a look, but I haven't needed to do that. But what I found, so Lionel sort of started to disappear. He would come back and do, he would sing at people's weddings in Port Pirie, and then it sort of started to disappear. But in 1942, I assumed he'd moved to Adelaide because he is singing at the town hall in Adelaide.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's nothing else. I have no other record of him in the paper, at least. But what I did find was his headstone, online, and I found his wife's name and his four children, and then I found out when he had died. So I had some kids' names, but the surname was just a little bit too generic. I didn't have middle names of the kids. I didn't have date of birth for the kids, so I was a bit stuck on this. I wanted to find the son. There were three daughters and a son. I thought I'd have more luck with him because the girls could have changed their names when they got married. But I just was so stuck. I didn't know what to do or how to get any further. And Helen, again, Will's mum, had said, what do I do? And she said, you could go to the Genealogy Society on Unley Road. So I found a time that I could go there. It was this big building with just newspapers and books and all sorts of things. And there was a really nice man there. I said, look, this is what I've got. I've got births, deaths, a full name. How do I want to find his children? And so what they've got there are a huge files where they've got just death notices and personal notices in the paper by year. So I knew that I could go to, he died in 2006. So I went to the 2006, and then it's all alphabeticalized and you could find the name of the person that died. Anyway, so I found Lionel's death notice, and the man who helped me said I was so lucky because the death notice was about 20 centimeters long. It was huge. I could have had this tiny little type up about him. But anyway, there was so much information there. And what it gave me really was, there was so much love. I could just see that this man was so beautiful and so loved. And reading it, like I teared up reading it because it was so special to have. And I thought about Granny and I thought, if he had been her dad, we wouldn't have been here. She would have had another life. But she also missed out on knowing this beautiful person. And it listed all of the children and the grandchildren, and it also listed the in-laws. So the son married a woman who had quite an unusual name. So I searched on Facebook and I found the woman, the wife, in a photo with the son and the two children. So the same people that had been listed on the death notice. What I also found, we've skipped a part where I was sitting at your table for dinner. So because this story has been just all in my mind for so long, I told anybody who wanted to hear it because I was so excited to tell it, because I was so excited. I called it my magic story because it felt so magic to me. But I had told you and Ellie, who is your wife and you're my dad, and we were sitting there and Sue was there for dinner. So Sue is Ellie's mum. So Sue must be, how old is she? She's 70. Okay, she's in her 70s, yeah. And Ellie said, why don't you tell Sue, because she'll be interested in this story. So I told her the story, and I don't know, have I said a last name yet?
No.
Can I say a last name?
Yep.
Lionel Edwards is his name. That's sort of the details here. And so I was telling the story to Sue, and she said, Olivia, did you say Lionel Edwards? I said, yeah, I did. I said, you don't know him, do you? She said, I think I do. And I said, what? She said, was he a pilot? And I said, yes, he was a pilot. She said, did he have four kids, rah, 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 rah. I said, yes, he did. And her parents, so her dad, Wal, and her mum, Kath, were very, very good family friends with Lionel and his wife. Her name was Joan.
An amazing Adelaide twist.
Yes, they were friends. So Lionel, after the war, became a pilot South Australian Airlines,
yep,
or something. He flew with them, with Walt. And they were friends. And so Sue remembers playing with the children. And what was actually really interesting and information that I needed from Sue, the woman that Lionel married was a widow and she already had two children. So the first two children on, so the only way I knew the children was in his on his funeral plaque, four children. The first two were not his kids. So if I'd found them, I wouldn't have had any luck, like DNA if I'm talking about. The two younger children were twins and they were his biological children. And Sue had said something about, she remembered everybody laughed because he was such a bachelor. So he must have got married. I think I worked it out that he was in his 30s at least when he got married, which back then was, I suppose, a bit old. And they all laughed because he was a bachelor. Then all of a sudden he married a woman with two kids and then they had twins. So this bachelor all of a sudden had four children. And Sue remembers playing with them, especially the older two. And what I found in the paper on his death notice was a death what do you call those things? You know, when people write into the paper.
Oh, yeah.
The
yep.
Whatever you write.
Yep.
What are they called? Obituary thing. There was a note from Catherine Wall and it said, "Thank you, Lionel, for your warm and caring nature, our flying days, but above all, the privilege of your friendship to both of us. You were an inspiration." From Ailey's grandparents, who I met. And I know Wall died a long time ago, but I did meet him. And Kath died not only 2 years ago. So they were friends and there was this connection. And I just couldn't believe it that there was that connection. So what? I said, "Sue, is there any more information? Are there any photos? Have you got anything that can help me, or do you have any contact with the children?" And so since then, she sent me two photos of Lionel. So all I had his one photo in that book that I'd found originally, and there was a photo in his war record where he looked very young. And Sue sent me photos too, one where he was maybe 50, and then another photo that he looks about 70. The first one was in his pilot's uniform, and then an older one at a retirement party. So that was so special to have those photos, and I remember I sent one to Granny and she said, "Oh, we've got the same ears," and who knows if they do, but you know, she always thought she had funny ears. I feel like all of these pieces just came together so well and so easily for me, because people do this research for years and years and years, and this has just happened.
Yeah, it was amazingly quick how you were able to gather this.
Yeah, and so what happened after the how I found that woman on Facebook, I contacted the daughter, so Lionel's granddaughter, okay? Lionel's granddaughter is the same age as me, so Lionel is potentially my great-grandfather, and this is just her grandfather, so we've had one extra generation because everyone had kids so early in our family. And I told her, I said, "Look, I really could be wrong, but I really truly believe that your grandfather, Lionel, is my grandma's father." And I told her a little bit of the story and she was really intrigued, really interested. And she said, "Wow, that would be amazing. I can't believe it. Dad's got three sisters. How funny if he had a fourth sister." And she told me, she said, "Look, I just wanted you to know that he was so loved and he just loved music and he loved flying and he was so passionate about family and he was a really beautiful man." And so I shared a few other things because I had put a few things on my Instagram, some stories and things, and I had linked her to them. I said, "Look, have a look at this if you're interested." And she replied saying that she, after she'd been so interested and so like forthcoming with information and just conversation back and forth, she all of a sudden became quite, I don't want to say cold, but she said, "It's not him. It cannot be him because you've said that she didn't know the name of the man and it was at a dance and it sounds like a one-night stand." And she said, "That couldn't be my grandfather because he went to church and he didn't drink alcohol," which I know to be true because Sue said he didn't drink alcohol. But I said to her...
But he wasn't allowed into the barracks.
Yes, I said, but I do have his war record and it does say 9 times he was denied entry for drunkenness. She said, "They can't be right. They must be wrong." And I said, "Look, I'll send the records to you." So I'd emailed them to her. And I feel like you can decide not to drink as an adult, but it doesn't mean that at 18 you didn't have a bit of fun and you went to a party and you drank a lot. Like, that doesn't mean that he wasn't a good person, does it? Anyway, that she didn't have any more contact with me after that. She didn't like it. And I'd said in the email when I forwarded the war records, I said, "Look, I really might be wrong. And I said, this doesn't change anything for your family. It was just for an interest's sake, for my granny, for our family, just to know. That's all that we wanted to do was know. What I really wanted was some DNA, though. Anyway, I felt like I kept going over that conversation back and forth. And I thought, God, maybe I said the wrong thing, or maybe I was too excited or too forward. But I felt like everything that I said was just kind, and I felt like I was pretty, I don't know, I think I was pretty nice about how I went about it. I don't think I put any foot out of line. She just didn't like that her grandfather maybe had a one-night stand.
Well, maybe it was her dad that didn't like it.
Yeah, I don't know. And I said, look, can you speak to your dad? Can you speak to your auntie, somebody? And she hasn't replied. So I wonder if she'll listen to this.
Mm.
Maybe.
She might not know it exists.
Maybe.
Mm.
Maybe somebody will listen to it. Maybe she'll be interested one day. Because, like, I can give you all this information like I have, and I've got a lot of information, but there's no proof. It's just stuff that I've weaved together. Mm. And that's fine. Like, I believe that it's him. And I don't know if Granny does believe it's him or not. But wouldn't it be so nice if someone could give me a DNA sample and we could, like, just know for sure that that is her dad.
Mm.
But actually what happened, Granny was at Pasadena Foodland with my auntie, and they were sitting there, and Granny said, oh, what's the latest with the Lionel story? And in walked Sue. It's Ellie's mum. In walked Sue. And they recognised her, and my auntie Kathy went up to her and said, oh, Sue, it's Ryan, come and say hello. And Sue went up to Granny, and who they had met before, but a long time ago they would have met at our wedding. And she said, oh, goodness, you look so much like Lionel. You look so much like him. And that just wouldn't happen if it wasn't him.
No.
But do you know what I really love? So, well, I love all of this, but just all of the connections. So Kath and Will had that holiday house at Black Point that you and Ellie went to a lot. And Will and I, like, before we had kids, we went there a lot.
Mm.
We had our honeymoon there. We stayed there for 10 days after our wedding. And I remember one time we did a 2-week stint there, and we just always would come and see you. And I don't know for a fact, but Sue has said, I'm just sure that Lionel would have gone there to stay.
Mm.
If they were such good family friends, Lionel and his wife would have had a holiday there.
Mm.
They must have been there, and I have been there.
Mm.
And Sue now has given me Kath's old best dinner set.
Mm.
And surely Lionel had dinner at their house using the best dinner set.
Mm.
And so I use it for every day now. We've only smashed one. But Sue said it didn't matter if any smashed. She said, just use it. And maybe he ate off the plates that I have at home. Mm. I don't know.
Mm.
But he was buried at Centennial Park. And I don't remember the last time that I went there, but I had to go to pick up something from Gumtree the other day. And it was just around the corner. I had the girls in the car, and it was around the corner from the cemetery. And I thought, I'm going to go there. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to try to find his grave. And so you can just type in a name into Centennial Park website, and it shows you where their plot is. And I don't know if you've been to Centennial Park, but it's like the Botanic Gardens. It is so beautiful. And Iris was asleep, and I left the girls in the car listening to their Enchanted Wood. And I was like, I'll just be quick. I'll just go and have a look. And it told me that he was in the Rose Garden, and he was the plot. And it's so big. And I was walking around, and I thought, God, the girls have been in the car for ages. And the next thing I hear, Mum. The girls had got out the car because Iris had woken up, and they were just exploring the cemetery. And anyway, we'd met it up, and I found it. And he's with his wife, and in the most beautiful plot with this giant weeping rose. And Iris and I picked a rose, and we put it in his the little holder for the flower. And we just sat there for a while. It was just a really nice. And I've never visited cemeteries. I've never visited a grave. I felt like I never wanted to, but I felt like I wanted to see this. And then, so Lyndon is also buried there. So Lyndon is Granny's son, who died in 88 when he was 18. And I knew he was there, and I have been there once with Mum, but I didn't know where it was. So I looked him up as well, and, brought the girls, and we were trying to find it. And it ended up only being like maybe 200 metres away from Lionel's grave. And we picked another rose and we put it in there. And it just felt really special. I felt like it was the full circle just to close it. I don't know. But you know, so Papa has now died just last month, and all this year, it was such a, for me at least, this felt like such a big thing for Granny. And I think if she was in another... If so much wasn't happening with Papa, she would have been more interested. And I know that she is interested, but she had been so distracted. And Papa had no... he just wouldn't understand. He couldn't even talk in the end. So I just felt like for Granny and Papa, they were married just 60 years, just the week before he died. She couldn't tell him. Like, such a big thing in her life. I found my father, and you can't tell your husband that you've been with for 60 years that you found him.
Yeah.
And that felt sad to me, that it would have been so beautiful if this had happened last year and Papa could have known it. Not that maybe he wouldn't have cared, but just a thing that you want to share with somebody important to you.
Mm. The whole thing's a happy, sad tale.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's very sad, but like, this feels so beautiful to me to have pieced it all together. And one thing I'm waiting for, so Granny was born at the Queen Victoria Maternity Hospital. That's at Bulletin. So I think that was then turned into the, what's that hospital called? It's not there anymore, but I think Phil was born there. Anyway, that's where they would send the unwed mothers, and she lived there for 6 weeks, and she cleaned. So they had to clean and help the nuns while they were waiting to have their baby. It must have been 6 weeks, because she was only discharged from the Air Force 3 weeks before. Anyway, that's where she was born. And I've contacted them to try to get hospital records, because I'd like Winnie's records and Granny's birth records, but they say that can take up to 12 months, so I haven't found that yet. But I don't think that I need to find anything else now, because I've got enough answers, and I believe that that is my great-grandfather, and I also believe that he... I'm not going to say love, because it wasn't love, but I believe that he, like, because Winnie had said that he wanted to see her again, and Granny said she remembered they were doing a march or a procession, a training thing, and he was trying to get her attention, and for whatever reason she didn't want to connect with him again. But I think for quite a while the family had maybe thought that something had happened to her, like it was not consensual, but I don't believe that. I don't believe that anymore. I believe that he was just an 18-year-old boy and had this connection and this passion with this girl who, you know, they were just so young.
It was probably more likely she just didn't want to anyone to know who it was.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, probably. But I don't know. So for her to say she didn't know his name or remember him, I don't know if that's true or not. But just to know... I believe, with what Hayley had said to me, I believe that Granny was so loved, and it was just so important to know that she was a loved child.
Well, not only that, her adopted parents, you know, she talks fondly of them.
She talks very, not so much her dad. She said her dad wasn't there. He was away at war when she was adopted, so there was a bit of a disconnect. I think she was about 2 when he came home. And they had a biological daughter who was maybe 10 years older than Granny, quite a bit older, but she loved her mum, and she said her mum loved her, and she didn't feel like she missed out on being loved. But I think about, like, to have been taken away from your mother at 6 weeks old, that does so much to that mother, but to that baby.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine it.
To be taken away from the only mother that you've known, and yes, to be given to another loving mother, but it's not your mother.
Mm.
But Granny talks about her like she was, because she was her mum, and she loved her.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did you do all this? This is like a lot of work, and you're a busy woman.
It was a lot of work.
3 daughters and...
Yeah. Well, at the time, I didn't do anything else except look at this stuff every night, because I was like so excited about it. And then while I was doing it, I thought I could be a detective. I want to, like, I could start charging people to this. But then it sort of stopped, because there wasn't anything else I needed to do until recently. But now, yeah, I think that I think I'm at the end. I don't think that we do need any more, unless they want to give me a blood sample.
Mm.
Be good. I did look up. I think it's pretty expensive to do a DNA test to check, like, paternity.
I don't think you need it.
No.
I just think that it's a great story, and it's, you know, it's a, while it's a happy, sad story, it's it is a love story as well.
I know, it does feel like a love story. It really does. But like Lionel, I think he's just a really good man. Mm. And I love that I know that he was a really good man and not some awful man at a dance that forced himself on her. Like, he just was a good person.
I wonder, like, the sliding doors side of things of it. You know, the fact that he and his parents live 300 metres away.
Yeah.
How many children are there on the planet whose dads don't even know they exist?
Probably a lot.
Yeah.
Probably a lot.
Mm.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm. Good story.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good story. What I didn't talk about was when she met Winnie. Did I talk about that?
No.
So she'd connected with that agency, and Winnie came to Port Pirie to meet them. It must have been in the 70s. And Mum said she remembers she had to give up her room or the bed so Winnie could sleep there, and she smoked. And what Winnie had said to Hayley in that session was that it was equal parts beautiful and heartbreaking and healing to meet Granny again. But Granny hasn't really told me very much. She doesn't remember very much, but they were supposed to meet up again. I'm wondering if they did meet up again and they were supposed to meet up a third time. She was supposed to meet up, and Winnie couldn't do it. She decided it was too much. It was too hard for her, and she never saw her again. And that was it.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, you just look at what could have been your life.
Mm.
And for her to have had no children, it's...
Well, we should get Granny's side of the story.
I think you should.
Mm. Hi, Granny.
Hi, Anthony.
Good, thanks. You're on a podcast.
Yes, apparently.
Mm. Yeah. We've been talking to Olivia about the story that she's done some investigating, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And she thinks she might have found a man that's possibly your father.
Very interesting.
Isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. After all these years.
After all these years.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Long time. Nearly 80 years.
That's how old you are?
Yeah, in next April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
21st. Mm.
So from the story point of view, you... Up until Olivia did this, you had no idea, except for maybe tiny little snippets, that Winnie, who was your actual birth mother, might have given you. Because you met her, haven't you?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yes, I met her probably 20 years ago.
Mm.
That was very interesting. There wasn't... any love between us at all, because it was just like meeting a stranger. But she didn't tell me too much. She just told me that she was in the Air Force and she went to a dance one night, and this man came up and danced with her, and she said he got quite involved with her, and she said he more or less persuaded her. Anyway, she ended up being pregnant with me. And after that, whatever happened that night, he wanted to see her again, but she didn't want anything to do with him because she said he frightened her. And she was only young, 18, I think, 19. And so she never had any more to do with him, and found out she was pregnant. And then she left the Air Force. She said they looked after her.
What did she do in the Air Force?
She was a driver. She was a driver for a while. She used to drive the knobs around, she said. And then she went into the kitchen area, in the cooking, and yeah. So, yeah.
The next thing, she's in Adelaide.
Yeah. Yeah, she ended up by going... She went into It was a home, St. Joseph's, the nuns, because her mother, she came from a Catholic family and they wanted her to go. And she had her baby. She waited. She was in there for about 6 weeks. It was run by the nuns at Fullerton there. I forget the name of the place. It's still there, the building. Anyway, I was born there and she was going to adopt me out, and then she wanted to keep me. She didn't know what she wanted to do because she was only young during the war too, so she wasn't sure. Anyway, in the end, she said 6 weeks, and she decided she'd adopt me out.
Do you think she was under pressure from her parents?
Probably. I think so, because that sort of era was a bit...
Shame. You know,
Yes, definitely. It's very sad. She certainly wouldn't have been the first or the last, so, but that went on quite a bit.
Yeah, Olivia talks about some of the numbers of the adoption rates that went on back then.
We've got no idea. There's a lot of us like me around, and unfortunately... you know, I did meet her, but I was married and my kids were getting older. But it was nice to meet her and hear this and know a little bit about my past, but didn't know anything about the father until my granddaughter now is looking into it all. So it'll be interesting to see if anything becomes of that. She has found out a few things.
Did she used to, because the babies used to be kept in a room all together rather than with the mums, did she used to sneak in?
Yeah, she said she used to get up, we had to go, you know, the lights were out, and she said I'd sneak out and go and get me and take me back to bed with her for a while. And I think she would have loved to have kept me, I'm sure she would have. And you know, when I met her, she had a lot of problems, mental problems, and I think it's all basically went back to giving me up, adopting me out, because she had three husbands, and she said the first and second one didn't work out, but she said the third one was the best one, but unfortunately he died, but she never had any more children. So it must have been horrible for her, you know, to know that.
Yeah, can you imagine what it would be like to be snuggling this baby in your bed in hospital, knowing that you're going to
have to give her up. Yeah.
And never knowing their fate.
That's right. Well, I suppose she, years ago, about adoptions sort of opened up a bit more into the public to find out if there was any information on either side. And I got in touch with, it was the news that used to be out every evening in South Australia. Anyway, I got in touch with them, and they, I can't remember exactly what I did, but anyway, they got in touch with, I don't know how it worked now, because it's a fair, over 20 years ago. Anyway, they got in touch and they matched me up with her. They got in touch with me to tell me that who my mother was. And I went around and got her address and got in touch with her. She lived in Sydney. And she came over. She was one of six, Winnie. She came over to South Australia, stayed with her sister, an older sister, and I went there and met her. And, that was... there was nothing there between us. It was just like a stranger, but it was nice to know a bit who my mother was, and she was pleased to know that I'd been brought up as she wanted, you know, with beautiful parents, and I had a lovely husband and kids of my own, and she was very, very happy to know that, and I was happy to know a bit about my past and my family, you know, a bit about. It's nice to have some idea where you've come from.
Yeah, that's good that she inquired. If I was in that position, I met my child, I'd want to ask them, what was your childhood like?
Yeah, I think she did. Yeah, she was. She was very interested. But the parents that adopted me were both passed on at this stage, so they didn't know about me getting in touch with Winnie.
Had you waited till they died before you made inquiries?
I probably would have, because I wouldn't have. But then my mother was a beautiful woman. She wouldn't, I'm sure she would have understood, but there wasn't the opportunity. It was always a thought in my mind, you know. You do think that when you're adopted. you just wonder what your background, what sort of background you've come from. But I wouldn't have liked, because I had such a beautiful adopted parents, especially my mother. My father at the time was White War. So you do get the feeling you don't want to upset them, especially in that era too. You know, things weren't as open as they are now. Yeah, so.
So you had a beautiful upbringing.
I did. Yeah, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. But I didn't meet my father. He was away. My adopted father was away. He was in the Air Force too. I didn't see him till I was 18 months old, so he didn't have that bond with me as the baby, but my mother, I couldn't have got a better mum. She was absolutely wonderful. She had only one child, Maureen. She was my older sister. She was 8 years older. And mum, for some unknown reason, never had any more children, so adopted me, and was just... Yeah, couldn't have got a better mother or father.
What was that like growing up in Port Pirie?
Good at the time. I thought so. I went to St. Mark's School. had a lot of friends there. The nuns were pretty tough on us, to a point. But we certainly couldn't come home and complain about anything, because... And the mother would say, well, you know, you must have deserved it, or it would have been a good reason, you know.
Not like nowadays when parents are straight down the school poking their fingers in the chest.
That's right. But they were lovely. Most of the nuns were very nice. There were a couple that we used to be a bit frightened of. But, no, it was good, and I had some good girlfriends, but the boys, they opened up a boys' college in Pirie, so the boys, we were separated, so it was just mainly all girls for a long time. So that was good.
And that's where you met your husband?
Yes, in Port Pirie, I went to a dance with a girlfriend one night. I didn't want to go to this. I'd played netball, it was a Saturday. And we always played netball on a Saturday, and I was tired. And anyway, a good friend of mine, she's Jeanette, her name was, she said, oh, I've got tickets to go to the ball in the town hall at Port Pirie, which has been demolished now. It's not there anymore. Anyway, I said, no, I don't feel like it. No, I don't. She said, no, come on, we've got tickets. Anyway, she talked me into it. So we walked. And we walked, she came over to my house, and we walked, it probably took us 15 minutes to walk to the, because things were pretty close, but Pirie wasn't that big at that stage. I don't think we were a city then. Anyway, we walked to the town hall and had a few dances, and I enjoyed it, but I just wanted to go home. And when we came out from the dance, we were all talking out the front there, and Jeanette, my friend I was with, she said, I'll just go over to the toilet, because in those days the toilet for the town hall was outside. So she went over there and I was just waiting there, and she came back with this lad bloke, and what was his name, I forget his name now. Anyway, he said, oh, this is such and such, and wasn't my husband to be at the time. Anyway, he said, Jeanette, how are you girls getting home? Jeanette said, oh, we're going to walk home, we'll get a taxi. He said, no, me, I've got a mate over here in the street, and he's FJ Holden, come and get a ride. I said, no, I said, you go, Jeanette, I'll be right. No, he's got plenty of room. So I thought, all right, I'll go over. So I went over with Jeanette and what was his name? Dennis. His name, Dennis Mummery, his name. So we walked over there and opened up the front door and he said, oh, this is Oscar Pearson. And Oscar Pearson ended up my husband for nearly 60 years. So, yeah, that was lovely.
Mm.
After that, he dropped me home and he asked, would you like to go for a coffee somewhere? And I thought, I said, oh, yeah, I don't mind. So the four of us, we went down and had a coffee. And he dropped me home and I never thought any more about him. And in the meantime, he got tickets because he worked in spare parts in Port Pirie, car sales, spare parts. And he rang me up and said he's got a couple of tickets to the drive-in because he used to get them from, he used to, I don't know, do deals, I think, you know, spare parts for tickets. Anyway, he asked Jeanette to ask me if I'd like to go to the drive-in. She said, if you want her to go to the drive-in with you, you have to ring her up. So at the time I was a dental nurse at the dentist there, and he did ring me up, and I was surprised. I couldn't quite remember, and then I remembered who Oscar was. Anyway, I said, look, I said, oh, yeah, yes, that'd be nice, but I said, I have to go home and ask my parents, which you did in those days. Well, I did anyway. And I said, I think it'll be all right, but I have to ask my mum and dad. And anyway, my mother wasn't there at the time. She was in Adelaide because I had an older sister, and she was in Adelaide visiting her. So anyway, I went home, and anyway, Oscar said, I'll ring you in a couple of days. So I went home and asked Dad, and my dad said, yes, I suppose that's all right, as long as I meet him. So I waited, well, I didn't particularly wait, I didn't think much more about it. Anyway, he rang me up a few days later, and I said, yes, that'll be fine. And I said, you have to come and meet my father, and my mother's away, and yeah, so he didn't mind and picked me up and met Dad, and off the drive-in we went, and that was my story. We ended up 60 years later, and yeah.
What was so good about him?
Well, he was pretty quiet, and he was well-mannered. He was very thoughtful. And he was just... Well, he grew on me. I thought he was nice, but he got nicer and nicer.
Mm.
And I just fell in love with him. Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
That's a good story, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Mm. I think this all started when I just started sitting with Granny, and I would bring my phone and I'd just press record, and I just would have a conversation and ask her questions because I love asking questions. And one day she won't be here like Papa. We can't ask him anything anymore.
Mm.
It's all gone. All of those stories are gone. And, yeah, I feel like you just need to ask them while they're here. It's so important. For Winnie, there's just, it's all stopped now. There's nothing more. But to not even know what her last name is, it's just, that feels a little bit hard to, you know. Anyway, just what it is.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Time to let it go.
Yeah.
You've done a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
Mm.
I'm happy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, goodbye.
Thank you.
So,
see ya.
Bye.